Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
At Outside Engineering. Austin Rodriguez behind the glass. Killer Bees broadcasting live. Jack's Grill in the Heights. Delicious food. Friday cocktails, beer. Find us on Shepherd. The boys are out there. How's it going, guys? You doing all right?
No, Jeremy, not, but here. Yesterday, as you're well aware, at East River 9, I got caught behind a train. I made a last-ditch, last-second adjustment and made it with a couple minutes to spare because the train was not moving. And Joe informed me there are signs that say they can be at a standstill for up to 3 hours. So today, I left extra early and got 0.3 of a mile, as my navigation would tell me, from said Jack's Grill. And looked ahead and said, oh, look, there's another train, and it's at a standstill. It was at a standstill for 15 minutes. It then slowly started moving for 10 minutes. It then was at a standstill for another 15 minutes, and then I had to make an executive decision. So I parked my car, and as Joe pointed out, I broke the law. I parked my car. I took my valuables. I went underneath the railroad arm. I scaled between two boxcars. I jumped up, through, and down, and then I walked to Jack's Grill so that I could make it on time.
So where's your car?
About half a mile away.
You didn't walk half a mile.
Sure did.
You Ubered from your car.
No, sir. Not even close.
I believe that. I don't think you have Uber on your phone. Do you have Uber on your phone?
I do.
Okay.
I don't use it very often, but I do have it. But I would not have Ubered because I was so freaking mad that I needed to blow off the steam walking here.
Oh, we had the I had the under on you taking 90 seconds to mention the story, so I won. So thank you, Blankers. You've got me a lunch.
Make sound effects. I mean, I need more to call me out on it to make me look stupid for the fact that I'm already ticked off at what I've had to deal with.
I don't think it makes you look stupid. I don't think it makes you look stupid at all. How does it make you look stupid?
Because Paul and Joe already knew the story. They already teased
it's
the
funny.
Fact
it's
that
just
we
a,
were
it's just
it.
A fu- it's just a funny story. It's not. It doesn't make you look stupid in any way. That stuff happens. I'm sorry that it happened to you on back-to-back days. That's bad train left.
The train is still not moving, by the way. So
maybe you'd be crazy if it's the same train.
Anybody on Washington and Shepherd trying to come towards I-10, they're screwed.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that it happened to you. Better you than me, though. So there is that. Killer Bees live from Jack's Grill in the Heights. I'm assuming you haven't eaten yet since you just got there.
No, sir. Just got here.
I'm very jealous. Of course, I'm over at the baseball park, Houston, Texas, coming up later tonight. I love their burgers. We talked about this yesterday. I think their burgers for a fast casual place. I think Jack's is a fast casual. It's not fast food because it's not cheap. It's not, you know, bad material, all that stuff, bad food. It's the very best. Best fast casual burger, I think, in the city of Houston. Now, I'm jealous because I saw a picture of their wings on their little graphic to promote our show today. Those look unbelievable. I've never had the wings at Jack's. I've always gotten the burgers there, but these wings look delicious.
Yeah, I saw the wings, and then I saw the quesadillas, which I am a big fan of quesadillas and a connoisseur, and everything on the menu looks fantastic.
Yeah, looks very good. Reggie Jackson went on a podcast with the New York guys, some of the New York media types, Joel Sherman, which Reggie Jackson called him Joe. He called Joel Sherman Joe Sherman. How would you like it? Because you share the same first name as Mr. Sherman, Joel. How would you like it if we called you Joe?
Probably wouldn't be a big fan.
Okay. So I'm sure Joel Sherman was not a big fan that Reggie Jackson called him Joe. But anyways, Reggie Jackson was on with John Heyman. He was on with Joel Sherman. It's a podcast that they have. It's really about New York baseball. They asked him – most of the questions they asked him was about the Yankees. Asked him a little bit about the Oakland A's. But, of course, some of the Astros came up. The podcast is called The Show. Just decided properly to do our journalistic integrity. Not that I'm a journalist. I'm an influencer, creator, social media influencer. We know that. Anyways, Reggie Jackson said something that scared me. We're going to play three cuts from Reggie Jackson at some point through the show. Not sure we get them all to him here in this first segment. The very first thing that stood out to me was something that actually Chandler Rome retweeted from the show's tweet. Here was Reggie Jackson talking about kind of the power structure with the Houston Astros, and this scares me to no end.
You know, we have a great leadership group in our with our GM. Also, we have a couple of other advisors in Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell, who are very much involved in our decision making. I'm involved. Jim takes those decisions and puts them together, listens to our management and coaching staff on the field, talks to our GM and his staff. And then, of course, some of the analytics come into the future of a player, and our decisions are made that way, along with being fiscally responsible. Our being fiscally responsible, I think, is what kicked us out of the Snell deal. He signed a 2-year deal, I want to say, for 62. That's too much for him. He's been hurt a couple of times. And I think there's incentives on top of that. He's also got an option on his own. And between the 4 or 5 people that make the decisions with the Astros, we don't play that game.
What do you hear there, Blankers, when you hear Reggie Jackson, an advisor who is involved, he told you, in the decisions of the Houston Astros?
It sounds like as close to a lame duck general manager as anybody could imagine is quite possibly what Dana Brown is going through. If you have that many talking heads in a room that have the kind of baseball resumes and then a guy that just has money, you know, growing on trees, that is a scary, scary proposition if you're any franchise, but especially if you've got a general manager that's a young, up-and-coming general manager that wants to put his stamp on the franchise and wants to do the things that can help this organization. It sounds like it would take hell and high water and a vote in public before you could get something done there.
Yeah, I heard a lot there, to be honest. The first thing was, this sounds like a lot of influence when it comes to who's advising Jim Crane. And it's not really a secret. Maybe he peeled back the curtain and told us stuff that we already knew, but he took away any doubt, right? Like, there's that old saying, like, it's better to stay silent than open your mouth and remove all doubt. Well, he removed all doubt. Like, he said that there's 3 advisors, Craig Biggio. He didn't remember Jeff Bagwell's name for a little bit, but then it came to him. Jeff Bagwell and then Reggie Jackson. And they said, we're all involved. That's a little worrisome that you have 3 guys who I don't think are qualified to handle the job. We saw Jeff Bagwell do it on an interim basis, and it may have set the organization back a little bit. So I don't love the involvement there. Reggie Jackson would also like talk to these guys on why he left the Yankees, and he left the Yankees because Brian Cashman wouldn't listen to him on anything, and he wanted to go somewhere where he would have his opinions heard. So Reggie Jackson wants to have his opinions heard, and Jim Crane's listening to his opinions. So that part of it terrifies me. It also sounds like the advisors have equal say as general manager Dana Brown. Like you said, he's powerless. I completely agree with you. And then like Joe Espada, maybe Dusty Baker last year, they were involved in this, you know, decision-making process as well. So it sounds like you have at minimum 5, maybe 6 if you start to throw in like the analytical guy, whoever that might be, into the equation. And it's Jim Crane that's the general manager. Jim Crane is looking around, all right, Craig, what do you got to say? All right, Jeff, what do you got to say? All right, Reg, what do you got to say? Okay, Joe Espada, now we'll listen to you for a little bit. What do you got to say? Dana Brown, you're the last guy I'm going to talk to, but what do you have to say? And then Jim Crane at the head of the table is evaluating everything and making the decision on like whatever the Houston Astros want to do. And so, well, he's an owner. All owners do this. Do they? Was Jim Crane doing this when Jeff Luhnow was running the team? Whenever Jeff Luhnow was, had the Nerd Cave and he had all these guys, Mike Elias was around him. Was he that involved in building the roster then as he is now? I don't think so. I don't think he was this involved whenever James Click was running the team and constructing the roster. And I think because James Click didn't listen to the owner of the team a whole lot and these advisors is why ultimately James Click is no longer the general manager of the Houston Astros. So if the golden era for the Astros dies relatively soon, like maybe it dies this year, I hope not, I don't think so, but we can look back at the time point of when he made the decision, after the World Series no less, that he moved on from James Click. He gave him the little BS 1-year contract that he was never going to sign, that it was more insulting to hand it to him than it was to not hand it to him at all. We can look back at that time point as what, I'm not going to say slam the door because there is a little bit of a trickle-down effect, but ultimately what ended the golden era of the Houston Astros.
essentially, this is the worst case scenario of Jerry Jones with the Cowboys, Dan Snyder when he was owning the Washington football team, and the owner has a toy that he likes to tinker with. And the combo platter is, it seems like when you had the guys you mentioned, when you had a Luno, when you had a Click, you had guys that he didn't feel as comfortable doing what he wanted to do. So therefore, with the personality conflict with Click and with everything that happened with Luno, he finally got to a point where he said, I know how all this works. I know baseball. I've been around the game my whole life. I can do this. And then just to make sure I don't miss anything, I'm going to bring in some of my cronies that have been that are Hall of Famers that can assist. And it is a recipe for disaster. When Les Alexander owned the Rockets, he would do something similar. However, it was just him and Daryl Morey. And then early on, they might ask the coaching staff or they would get a few guys to have input. But at the end of the day, it would come down to two guys. When you talk about the guys that Reggie Jackson just rattled off, it sounds like such a cluster that I just can't even fathom how they've gotten the deals done that they've gotten done, whether they were good, bad, or ugly to this point. Because it sounds like nothing could get done. Because how often are all five guys on the same page?
Yeah, I actually want there to be one guy making decisions. Like, I yeah. want the baseball management guy in the room to be the one that makes the calls. And I want an owner who doesn't meddle. And I've heard that, you know, I was listening a little bit to John and Lance this morning, and Dell was calling Jim Crane Jerry Jones, which isn't something that, you know, is a compliment. You call somebody Jerry Jones, they're meddling, they're doing too much, they're probably not the best at what they're trying to do. But are we too far off on that, really? Because, well, you know, people, well, he's the best owner that Houston sports has ever had. Okay, that is true, but that's stuff that has happened in the past. Jerry Jones won three Super Bowls. Jerry Jones had good people around him, won three Super Bowls, and then got rid of the good people around him and played fantasy general manager. Mm-hmm. Is that not what yeah. Jim Crane is doing? Jim Crane won two World Series titles, has been to seven straight ALCSs. You know, did he have to fire Jeff Luno? You know, that's a different conversation for a different day. James Click was more than a competent general manager who he got rid of because they didn't see eye to eye. And now he, it sounds like to me, and Reggie Jackson peeling back the curtain in this podcast, is playing fantasy general manager.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Like, if you want to get your general manager, look, I understand if you're the owner of the team and it's your money and you want to be you want to know everything that's going on, you have every right to know what the moves that are being discussed, and if you want to put the final stamp of approval because it's you're signing the check, I get it. But if you want to then bring in these three extra guys, and I know that Dana has experience, but I don't think Dana's background is on the analytics side. I would think that at some point there's probably more guys involved because of the money and the crunching and the numbers and everything that – It's like information overload, opinion overload, and if it's two guys, it's your GM and your owner, that's as far as I would say that it should be. If you're talking about four or five guys, I don't care what their background was playing the game, that to me just sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
No, I see, I'll push back a little bit on that. I think that every front office has information overload. Like, you have a handful of assistant general managers. You have a scouting director. You have your nerd cave guys that are into the analytics. So, like, I don't think that there's too many bodies there. To me, it's not an issue where, you know, it's information overload per se. To me, it's you're giving all the information to a guy that you shouldn't be giving the information to. Love Jim Crane as an owner. Jim Crane should not be at the head of the table when it comes to building the roster and talking about the baseball decisions. That's whenever you hire a quality general manager, and I think that Jim Right. Crane has had quality general managers. Jeff Luno had plenty of people around him, but ultimately it came down to Jeff Luno. James Click had plenty of people around him, but ultimately it came down to James Click. Now the guy with all the people around him that's making the critical decisions and guiding his, like, you know, subordinates and the guys that are working for him to, you know, follow along with his plan is now the owner, Jim Crane, and I think that's a major problem.
Look, the general manager is supposed to be the guy, right? And most owners don't like to hear from too many people. So the analytics guys, the scouts you're talking about, those are all guys that report to the GM that will give all of their information and everything that they found on players or whatever they're trying to do to the GM. Then the GM takes all that information in a portfolio or otherwise, or just verbalizes, and it's the owner and the GM, and then the owner trusts, as you said, the general manager to tell me, this is the move we need to make. Now, he obviously has the ability to veto it because he's the owner if he doesn't like it. And we've heard of some of those stories in the past with some of the trades that they had talked about. But at the same time, you get all your information to your superior. Your superior, in this case, Dana Brown, would then just – I would be comfortable and I would feel a lot better if this was just Dana Brown and Jim Crane in a room and they're kicking it around. But where these guys probably want to have their voices heard and their opinions made is when you get these Hall of Fame guys that on the field when they played – interjecting into a room. The process can't go quickly if it goes at all, and I can't think that these are the kind of guys that I want breaking down talent on a, you know, on a franchise that's a World Series caliber team.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Reggie Jackson maybe didn't give us new information, but peeled the curtain, removed all doubt. The advisors on this in this organization, Reggie, Craig Biggio, Jeff Bagwell, they're heavily involved. Okay, maybe we already knew that, but Reggie Jackson made it official. And it seems that Jim Crane is playing the general manager on this team and that Dana Brown has the title, but is really just an assistant general manager. 713-780-ESPN. Is that troublesome for you? Also, we'll get into some of the other stuff that Reggie Jackson had to say. He talked about contract extensions for Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker. Okay, how likely is it that they're going to re-sign with Houston? We'll hear. The best rivalry going on in the city of Houston right now is Jeremy Booth and Houston Astro fans. We'll get into some Jeremy Booth fighting back. I love it. I love me some Ime Udoka, even though they lost yesterday. Who said it? Coming up at 4:30, Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros on the Shin. He'll be joining us later on in the program as well. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975 on YouTube. Just search ESPN Houston. You can find us there as well on Twitter. He's at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Jack's Grill in the Heights on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, a word from MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is where I always tell you to go if you want to put some money down on a game, a sporting event that you see on TV or that you are interested in, or you want to make an uninteresting sporting event more interesting. MyBookie.ag always takes care of their customers. That's why I tell you to go there. They've been in business for over a decade, so therefore your money's not going anywhere. It's safe and secure. And they're always running deals and specials to take care of their customers to make sure that it's even more beneficial that you go through them when you want to put money down. They're fantastic. Always remember our promo code, BET975. When you use that code, whenever you're on the website, you can get the kind of deals that you absolutely are going to love. Up to $1,000, when you put money in and use our promo code, they're going to put more in your account instantly. You put $200 in, they'll put an extra $100 on top of it. Now you got $300 in your account. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, and of course, more chances you can win. The fantastic thing is they've got live in-game betting on their website. You can watch the games while you're betting. It's all right there at your fingertips. And even when there's not games going on, and they got all the games from UFC and golf and everything that's coming up this weekend, they also have live dealers standing by for casino games at your beck and call. You want to play poker? You want to play blackjack? Dealers standing by, ready to make it all happen from the comfort of your own home and your own phone. Check them out today. Go to mybookie.ag. Use our promo code BET975. Do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. With the only place I tell you to do it, it's mybookie.ag, and use our promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jack's Grill in the Heights, delicious food, Friday cocktails, beer. Boys hanging out there until 6 o'clock. It's the one on Shepherd. I guess it's in B. Hannon's neck of the woods. We had a texter that said that he actually saw that train, Blankers. Yeah, I feel for you, Joel. I work down the street, and that train always catches our staff and patients. I actually saw it stopped when I left at 2:30 and detoured.
I actually went out again and checked on the balcony. It is still at a standstill. I have no idea. People are going to go way out of their way, but I actually called Lisa at the station to see if their traffic department had anything extra that I was missing. She said for over a mile in any direction, it was bright red and there was no way to get around the train until you get like up on the highway and over the overpass. It's crazy.
Yeah, wild trains, I tell you. 713-780-ESPN. One of the things that we didn't get to, the Reggie Jackson part of what he had to say, 4488, there's a couple more from Reggie. Do you two agree with Reggie's reasoning for not signing Blake Snell? What do you think about that?
Were you aware of his injury history?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that was – it's so far in the past to me that it's enough in the past that that wasn't a concern to me. Like, if you want to tell me that you didn't like the AAV and the years on the contract – That's fine, but you and I both talked about the fact Montgomery. The only thing that's different is you would have had to give up a pick to get him. I was more leaning if I'd have taken between the two, I would have been more on the lines of a Montgomery than a Snell. But I thought that their philosophy was more not the big money for the long term. So it kind of goes against what I thought, and I don't agree with it. I guess
That's the case. To me, it was more like what Reggie said was like we're going to be fiscally responsible, whether it's an AAV, whether it's in years. I do think that they're a little bit more willing to spend AAV than years. I'm okay with them not signing Blake Snell. Like it is pretty expensive. Like I'm okay with it. Like that to me is not this pound the table, stand on the table, red flag. They're awful. They're the worst. I do think that you should have fiscal responsibility as an owner. I think that that's one of the easiest ways to become a pretty lousy organization quickly is whenever you're locked up to a bunch of bad money. Now, the shorter the term, the easier it is to get out of it, obviously, because it's time, right? And the time would elapse quicker than if it were long term. Now, where I'll nitpick this is, okay, let's talk about fiscal responsibility. Josh Hader, a closer,
I was just going to ask you
$19 million a year for 5 years, whenever you could have spread that money around a little bit more. Rafael Montero, $11.5 million a year for 3 years for a guy who did it for 1 year. Also, whenever you look at the relief pitcher market, it's usually short-term deals. If it's not a closer, it's usually a 1 or 2 year deal. Look at Stanek. Look at Maton. Look at Hector Neris. So, like, the 3 years on that is wild to me. And then let's look at Jose Abreu, who you gave $19.5 million to per year for 3 years. So you're talking fiscal responsibility, but everything I'm seeing on paper, Montero, Abreu, you can make the case for Hader as well, not fiscally responsible.
At all. That's what I was going to ask you. The first thing I was going to say is, do you think that philosophy is in line with the Hader deal then? Because I understand the people that don't think they should have gotten another starting pitcher if it was the big front-of-the-line guys like Montgomery or Snell. But at the same time, if you're going to go and say that, then give me the rationale behind spending what you did with the amount of years you gave Josh Hader, because to me it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You had a closer that was one of the better closers in baseball in Ryan Pressly, and you had Abreu in the eighth, and you, like you said, you could have distributed that money a whole different way, probably not for as many years, and you could have gotten maybe four guys that could have significantly enhanced your day-to-day with this ball club for the next couple years of your future. So, yeah, I don't think that makes sense. And then when you start talking about even the Brantley deal, it was only a one-year deal, but it was excessive, especially if you had any inkling that he wasn't going to play for over three-quarters of the season, not to mention the deals you mentioned with Abreu and Montero.
Yeah, so I mean, you're right. Like, the Brantley deal was weird, too, especially because, like, the Astros didn't have a general manager. And here's, like, where I think Jim Crane is doing this. And, like, you can kind of make sense of it, not that you agree with it. Jim Crane employed Jeff Luhnow. Great hire. Jeff Luhnow was fantastic. Jeff Luhnow had his warts. No one's perfect. Traded for Roberto Osuna, depending on where you're at on that. I was made aware today that he was interested in Luke Heimlich from Oregon State, but he was talked out of that.
Oh,
that would have
really?
Been a disaster. I hadn't heard that, but the guy, I asked the guy, it was San Antonio, Tim in San Antonio. I asked him to supply me the context, and he gave it to me. So, like, there is at least one reference out there that Jeff Luhnow had to be talked out of Luke Heimlich. So, like, okay, that's not great. And then, of course, the sign-stealing stuff, wherever you're at on that. But that's why he fired him. I don't really care about the sign-stealing. I think everybody was doing it. I wouldn't have fired Jeff Luhnow, but that's why he did. And he was also blindsided about it, or he said he was blindsided about it. Jim Crane did. And he said whenever he fired him that I'm never going to let this happen again. Like, I'm going to be more involved. I'm going to be hands-on. And then he brought in Jim Crane, or he brought in James Click. James Click did a good job, but I don't think that James Click really, like, did everything that Crane wanted him to do, right? Like, they talked about Starling Marte. Liam Hendricks was another name that the Astros were, like, in on, but ultimately couldn't get across the finish line. And a lot of people think it was because Click didn't want to give the big money because he thought it was fiscally responsible. Turned out that was actually smart. Like, Starling Marte's not been good. Hendricks was more, like, a bad situation. He had with leukemia, right? And then he also had Tommy John, I believe. Might have been a shoulder. I don't know. But he was out for a year with arm trouble. So, like, Click was actually right on both of those two things. But here's another example. Like, you moved on from Click, and then what did you do at the general manager spot? You did nothing until January when the offseason was pretty much over so you could play fantasy general manager, and you made all those three moves, whether it was you, whether it was Bagwell, whether it was Reggie Jackson, whether that was the little parliament that was going on in the Astros hierarchy. You didn't hire a GM after you fired a competent GM. Yes, not technically fired. They just gave him a fake one-year contract offer. And you went out, you gave all those bad deals. Whether it was Montero on a three-year deal, silly to give a middle reliever 3 years. Michael Brantley with an ailing right shoulder that Jeff Bagwell should know all about, bad shoulders. It literally forced him to retire. And then Jose Abreu, which that's a little bit hindsight 2020 because we all liked the Abreu signing. It just turned out to be abysmal.
No, you look at it too, Jeremy, and this is where the ego, and no, owners have the biggest egos no matter who the players are in basically all of sports. And at a certain point and time, and I've had an owner tell me this on more than one occasion, I don't like that person and I don't have to tell you why, but we are not going to bring that person in because I don't like them. And you just have to take it and you just have to walk away. And so it sounds like to me there was obviously a personality conflict with Click. We know the stories of Luno being a my way or the highway, very egotistical, very, very, you know, opinionated guy. And at a certain point, once Crane got his feet wet and saw how everything was running and operating and with everything that had happened, he probably looked for the first opportunity he could get to move on from him. But at a certain point, when you want yes men and you want people in your organization that are just going to succumb to doing and acting and being like the owner wants you to be, you're not going to get the kind of opinions that are going to give you the decisions that are going to be able to further extend success with your organization, because their hands are going to be tied and they're going to be walking on eggshells trying to avoid being the next guy in the crosshairs of an owner that's volatile, that's not afraid to make decisions.
The fiscal responsibility to me is such a contradiction. Like, cool, you showed constraint when it came to Blake Snell with your fiscal responsibility, but you moved on from a solid general manager, you didn't hire a general manager, and you made three moves that were fiscally irresponsible. So you're being a hypocrite when you say that, Reg. Abreu, Montero, Michael Brantley. Is Josh Hader fiscally irresponsible? I think you can make a case that it wasn't in the best interest of the Astros spending $19 million a year on one reliever when they could have spread the wealth and signed a few. And I like Josh Hader. The other aspect of that is, like, was that Dana Brown's doing or was that Jim Crane's doing after the Kendall Graveman news? Because Kendall Graveman, the news came out that he was done for the year, and then the Astros had Hader within the week. So, like, who's making the call there?
I'm also curious, and we've had this conversation with other acquisitions as well. Where was the market at? Do we think that there was a market where Hader was going to get anything close from anybody else?
Hader was talking on a podcast with the Przinski one and then the Kratz guy. I listened to it, and he said that there were multiple teams that were around that figure. So I have to take
that at least makes me feel.
I guess we don't know for sure, but yeah.
That makes me feel better. But overall, yeah, it's just very worrisome that at a certain point, an owner gets so comfortable that he believes that, like you said, it's fantasy baseball. You can do as you wish and just have fun with it, and you don't have to report to anybody, so it doesn't matter. And that's where things can go dangerously in the wrong direction, and then trying to escape it and get back out of it is going to be very, very worrisome, because we like the fact that, for the most part, all these moves where they've elected to pass on a guy or not go any further with a guy because of their ability to stay pat with their belief that we're not going long-term massive money deals. Mm-hmm. Then you start looking at the deals that they have the potential to make, or that in the case of the Hader deal, the deal that they made when we knew that there were other holes and we knew other guys were leaving and there was a possibility to do things a different way to strengthen this team. And you start wondering, like, if he doesn't have anybody to answer to, he could run amok and just keep this kind of behavior up. And there's no one that can stop him. And there's nothing that, you know, and all it takes is one of these moves or two of these moves to backfire. Yeah. And we've already seen, thank goodness, the short-term ones are the ones that have backfired so far. But, you know, God forbid, Jim Crane decides he wants that big splash, sexy Hollywood-type name that rattles everybody's cage and says, look at the Astros. And then it's 5-6 years and it's a ton of money and it backfires to go, okay, now's the one where it can really hurt you for a long time.
I think you and I, too, are usually a little bit more understanding of not spending the money. Like, you and I really aren't, and this isn't like a pat on the back. It's just like our attributes as we grade all of this. Like, I don't need him to hashtag pay the man every single time. Like, I think it makes sense to hashtag not pay the man most of the time. But you can't say you're fiscally responsible and then you make a bunch of fiscally unresponsible moves, and then it's like, well, in this one case we're fiscally responsible, but over here we're not, and then we're all going to be these advisors to the head of the table, Jim Crane. And the other argument, too, is like Jim Crane, well, he's the best owner that the Houston Astros have ever had. How dare you talk bad about his name? I agree that Jim Crane is easily the best owner that the Houston Astros have ever had. Just like Jerry Jones, whenever he won three Super Bowls, was the best owner the Dallas Cowboys have ever had. Things change. Things evolve. And I don't like the evolution of how this Astros organization in the front office is currently being handled.
And you think about it, too, Jeremy, on that point. The wavelength is you walked into a situation where the rebuild was already done. You already had a team ready-made for winning. So the fact that you did win and then you won multiple championships is part of the reason and the main reason why you're elevated to the owner status that everybody gives you. You deserve it. But you also stayed out of the way long enough, or at least at a distance enough, to where you let the guys that you hired or were there already do their job. When it came down to you bringing in your guys or handling your business until you found the guy you wanted to bring in, right now it looks like that's not such a great – you didn't make great moves, and that's not such a great forecast for the future of your franchise if that continues.
Chris, should Crane have kept the last GM? I'm 100% yes on that one.
Yeah, at a certain point, you're not going to like everybody that works in your organization and be their best friends and want to go have dinner and play golf like you do with Verlander and some of your guys. But you know that Click was the best of both worlds. Click could analyze talent. Click was shrewd with the finances. He had a background in it, and what he did while he was here, you won a World Series with. So he didn't give you any reason other than a personality conflict to want to get rid of him.
8437, yes, Reggie Jackson, because giving Montero, who was only good for 1 year of his career, a top reliever paycheck for 3 years, Abreu, who's a shell of what he was, a three-year deal, and give Hader a five-year deal when closure is not what we need, is being fiscally responsible. Please tell me more, Reggie Jackson. Heavy sarcasm there. 3667, are you sure, assuming Brown is the last in line to have a say? I don't know. I don't know who Jim Crane goes to first. I have no clue. Well, all we heard there was that he has advisors, Biggio, Bagwell, Reggie. He'll talk to Dana Brown. He'll talk to manager Joe Espada. That's what we
know. We don't know the pecking order. Yeah, we just know the voices that could be in the room. We don't know what the pecking order is. But he gave you enough to believe that it isn't just a two-man show when the decision needs to be made. It sounds like there's too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that. I think you have the wrong chef. I think they all have sous chefs. But I think you have the wrong chef. Thank you, Chef. 8437, at this point, I'm willing to walk back that I think Click has been far better than Brown so far because I have no reason to believe anything that's going on Brown has any say in. I'm with you on that. I'd rather have Click than Brown, but I don't think Brown is bad, and I don't think that Dana Brown has had a full deck of cards to work with.
No, I think this tells you more than anything that we could even assume or think about in the past, that he is basically a lame duck general manager that is simply just a front person for personnel moves that are being made by your owner.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Spent a good amount of time banking on the front office of the Astros, and the Astros aren't playing good right now. They're 4-10. They're 6 games below .500 for the first time since 2016. What gives you optimism about the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776. Why do you have optimism in the Stros? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, I want to tell you again about the good people at X Golf Katy. If you're a golfer in the Houston area and you know that you love playing golf, you want to play golf all the time. That means when it's raining, when it's dark outside, you'd still love to be able to play golf. That's why you go to X Golf and Katy, because they have the best golf simulators I've ever been on. They're the only X Golf simulators in the area. The putting is absolutely something that is accurate that you can work on your game with. The chipping and every other shot in your bag, you can measure the distance, the spin, the direction, all those different things. You can play courses and play it in literally a quarter of the time that it takes you to play 18 holes on a real course, because there's no carts, no running or getting or walking to your ball, just shot after shot, you hitting exactly the same shots you would hit outside, inside, in a controlled air conditioned environment. That's also a great sports bar, too. Did I mention great food, great beverages, lots of TVs, a clean environment to watch sports while you're playing golf, all under one roof. If you've never been and you're a golf fan, you will be there and go again and again. If you're looking for a sports bar in the Katy area, you could do a lot worse than going to X Golf in Katy because it is fantastic. Check them out today. Chris is the owner. Tell them I sent you by because they are doing great things thanks to you guys listening to me and going there when you want to hit balls and hang out. Check out X Golf Katy today.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. We're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5. Jack's Grill in the Heights, the spot to be, it's a place for lunch, it's your place for dinner. The burgers are fantastic. The wings look great. Delicious food. It's your place to have a cocktail, have a cold beer. Can't beat Jack's Grill. We're at the boys are at the one at the Heights right now. I go to the one up in Spring on Rayford. That one's fantastic, too. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. Before we get into what gives you optimism about the Astros and what does give you optimism about the Astros, 713-780-ESPN. Here was Reggie Jackson talking about the possibility of extending Alex Bregman. His contract's done at the end of this year. And Kyle Tucker, who's got this year and one more.
Are we going to be able to keep Tucker? Are we going to be able to keep Bregman? We hope so, but we're not going to go beyond Jim's fiscal responsibility to the team and its budget. We're at the top right now in reference to the tax. We have a small tax that we have to pay, and then the understanding of that is, you know, I understand it's 100% plus 10, 20, 30% at times. So it gets to the point to where it doesn't fit. And so we go other ways.
There's one-fifth of who's running this team doesn't know the percentages of the tax threshold that it takes great for the Astros. That's just fantastic there. What do you hear whenever you hear Reggie Jackson talk about the possibility of extending Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman?
I hear no fiscal responsibility.
I hear they're gone. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear a guy that is going to say, at least from this standpoint, as much as he probably should have had someone kind of putting the brakes on some of the things he was saying, and I don't know if they even knew that he did this podcast.
Probably not.
But and those are dangerous situations to be in. But I hear that they're going to say the right things right now. Of course, you're going to want both those guys back. If you just go back to the first quote about being fiscally responsible, at what price, right? Because we do know that they are very, very analytically driven in terms of return on investment, making sure you're not paying for the back of the baseball card, Jeff Bagwell. You're paying for what you can get for the guy that you're bringing in. And in the case of those two guys, we know there's diminishing returns on one for sure in Bregman, and we know that Tucker's a guy that's going to be chasing top dollar, as he should, based on the fact that he did not want the same kind of deal that Yordan signed. So I think that they are going to have a challenge, and for the time being, they're saying the right things to let their fan base and everybody watching them watch the situation go, yeah, we're in it. We want them back. We want to do what we need to do to bring them back. But I don't think that tells me a whole lot more than that at this point.
Yeah, I think it tells to me it tells me they're gone, unless they play themselves back into what you're willing to pay. It sounds like their demand right now would mean that the Astros are being fiscally irresponsible in order to sign them. Now, if they come back down to you, okay, we're not closing the door on that because we would like to have you back. We're just going to do it on our number. And I don't think that Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman are going to want to do it on their number. Now, Bregman's playing so badly that he might come back down to earth, which is more of the Astros' number. But that quote, that soundbite from Reggie Jackson to me, they're as good as gone.
Yeah, I think Bregman, you almost would be doing him a solid because I think he might not have any choice but to reevaluate. Sure, I'm sure he'd be looking for a one-year deal just to buy him a chance to try and prove himself again. But Bregman might be forced to do it. Tucker, probably not.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. What gives you optimism about the Astros? Before we give you our answer and before we give you some of these texters' answers, here was Reggie Jackson on why he has optimism for the Astros.
You get to the point to where I have an understanding of the quality of the team, the quality of the players. Our organization is special. Our leadership is special. And so I know that we have a good ball club and we're going to contend in this division race again. Be us in Texas and Seattle will creep in there, if you will. But we're a 95 win team. As I look at us, we could win 101 or so.
101 wins? You think the Astros have that in them?
I think they have it in them. Maybe. Sure, it's possible. But based on the start, too, I don't know that that's the kind of number I'm thinking about.
They won 106.
Winning the division,
22.
Fair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he's that far off base. I still think that the Astros will get back into this division. The season's not over. I still think they're going to be in the division race.
But I think you can win the division with 95 wins. I
mean, they won it last year with 90. They won it last year with 90 wins. Yeah, I don't.
That's why I think over 100 is a little bit much.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know why you just didn't say 100. We can win 95, 101 games. It was just a weird number to go to. I feel like 101 is probably out of the realm of possibility. I still think that they can contend. He also threw a little bit of a shot at Seattle. They can get into it a little bit, I guess. What gives you reason for optimism for the Stros?
I think, again, instead of just because we believe and because we have cool, good people in the organization, like Reggie said, I think it's because when you look at just the guys that are hurt right now and the chance that you're going to get those kind of pitchers back to help your pitching staff, that's encouraging because you couple that with the fact that I firmly believe this lineup is still better than it was, no matter how bad first base has been, than it was a year ago, 2 years ago. The fact that you have a guy like Yiner in your lineup almost every day, the fact that you seem to still be getting production out of the guys you need to, and Bregman looks like he's starting to find it a little bit, that's a guy that obviously worries you to some degree, and if you're going to fix first base. But I believe that just the fact that you have so much talent within the offensive lineup, they're a good defensive ball club, and the fact that they're going to be getting pitching help back makes me believe that I have not wavered in the fact that I believe they're not only going to get back in this thing, I think they're still going to win the division, they're going to be a playoff team, and they're going to have their chances. So I just think there's too much talent, and the injuries allow you the ability to think about the fact that there's still a chance you're going to get significant pieces back that can help you take another step.
I actually think the middle relief's been better than I expected. Like, Seth Martinez hasn't given up a run. Taylor with an E, Scott, has been somewhat pretty good, surprisingly. So, like, you're getting pitchers back at some point. What's killed you these last few days is you're getting no length out of your starters. I mean, the Framber-Valdez thing killed you because you're thinking you have Framber-Valdez going to the mound. He can get you 6-7 innings. He gets you to the back end of the bullpen or at least deep into the middle of the game, right? And all of a sudden, he doesn't pitch. You have a guy that goes out there who doesn't belong in the big leagues and Blair Henley with his long neck, and he gives you one out. Then the very next day, Spencer Arrighetti makes his debut. He doesn't get out of the third inning, right? Went 2 1/3.
Right.
And then yesterday, Hunter Brown gets two outs, doesn't get through the first inning. So, like, that killed your ERA because now those guys got lit up, and they're also eating up the bullpen. Like, they're throwing tons of pitches. I saw Brandon Belak threw, like, 143 pitches in, like, a five-day span or something like that. Astros actually made a move today. Joel Cunnell. They actually called him up for Parker Mashinsky.
The softball pitcher's back?
Yeah, they need guys who can are available, that aren't gassed, that aren't tired. So they activated him. My optimism is health. I think this offense is going to be fine. I think this offense is going to be just fine. Like, some of their numbers are fine relative to baseball. It's runners in scoring position that has killed them. But I think the offense is going to produce. I think they'll be a top 10, maybe even a top 5 offense when it's all said and done. And then pitching, you just hope everybody gets healthy, and you hope that the injuries you do have right now are, like, not a big deal. Like, you get Verlander back after this rehab start, that what we're hearing on Framber-Valdez is true, and that he just misses a couple of starts. Even Jose Urquidy would help this team because he could pitch in the bullpen if need be, or just take Hunter Brown's spot because he's been awful. And then in the summer, reinforcements on the way. The thing is, you gotta hover with everybody else while this is going on. You can't get too far out of this race. But I agree with Reggie that they're going to be in the race a little bit. Not a little bit. I do think that they'll be in the race. 713-780-ESPN. What gives you optimism for the Stros? 8437, the silver lining I see is that they have been exposed early in the season. Hopefully they can be fixed relatively soon when there's still time. Yeah, that's a good point. Trevor Bauer, no thanks. Optimism, the schedule lightens up after the Braves series. That is true, and they go on the road. Yeah. And they're better on the road than they are at home, so I guess that is good news. It's a Rockets question. We'll get to that later. 713-780-ESPN. I'll have to keep saying this every day until y'all wake up. This lineup sucks. Soon this team will be totally dismantled.
I don't understand how you can say it sucks. Like, you've had multiple games where you put up double digits, where you know that you've got guys that are mainstays, that in the case of Altuve and Yordan, and you've got Tucker and Bregman that are capable major league hitters. You've got a guy like Yiner that might be one of the best premier up-and-coming young talents in the game. Pena looks like he's made enough improvements that he's going to be a better hitter, but even then he wasn't bad, and he's a good defender. I'm looking at this, and Chaz hasn't fallen off a planet. Like, I don't understand how you can say it sucks.
Yeah, maybe if I'm making the case for him, I don't think it sucks. Let's be clear. You have a first baseman where you get, sure, you know, that's a position where you're supposed to get offense that is giving you worst position player in baseball. Chaz has been disappointing. Jake's been disappointing. Alex Bregman's been disappointing. Tucker's been a little bit disappointing as well. But you do expect those guys to hit. Now, Astros right now a little bit under the league average in runs, so just to that texture's point. Maybe that texture was Jeremy Booth, who hates what Joe Espada is doing
that to
this lineup.
I did.
The best rivalry going on right now in the city of Houston. Jeremy Booth versus the Houston Astros. Jeremy Booth fired back yesterday. I'm just going to get my popcorn ready. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights.
Best burgers in the city, Jack's Grill. Jack's Grill in the Heights, where the boys are. Delicious food. Friday cocktails, beers are the one on Shepherd in the Heights there. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, 6091. A couple of 10-game winning streaks, we'll be fine. So Dana Brown keeps saying. Said 2 weeks ago, yeah, we'll get on an 8-10-game winning streak, we'll be good. He said this week, we'll get on an 8-10-game winning streak, we'll be good. We'll see if it happens. Not too often does a Major League Baseball team go on a 10-game winning streak. We'll see. So the best rivalry in the city of Houston right now, Jeremy Booth and the Houston Astros. And here's the latest from Jeremy Booth. If you don't know the story, Jeremy Booth kind of he says he's not anti-analytics, but he's definitely got some old-school methods, which is fine. I like old-school methods. I have no problem with that. He hates the lineup construction. He doesn't like Yordan second. He wants him in the middle of the order, at least third or fourth, whatever. Twitter has gone after Jeremy Booth. And here was Jeremy Booth's latest going back at Twitter.
If you don't – this is – you ready, Jason? You ready? You ready? If you don't like what I do – and you still watch everything I do, you're still a fan. You're still a fan, buddy. Okay? If you think what I'm saying isn't relevant, then shut it. Go watch something else. If you think what I'm saying is wrong, you're entitled to your opinion. Nothing you say to me is going to bother me. I literally sit there and I laugh about how asinine some of these responses are. And when the Astros have 10, 12, 14 hits and they get three runs, if you can't realize that's a problem in lineup construction, if you can't realize your manager, their manager, is trying to find the way to get Yordan Alvarez and Tucker and Kyle Tucker as many opportunities to drive in runs as possible, then you never need to watch the game again. Pumpkin, okay? Go do something else because that's what they want to do. Go watch basketball. Go watch hockey. Go watch soccer. I know. Go do some math.
I take exception to that as a math major for one semester.
Pumpkin.
My favorite part about that, Blankers, nothing you say will bother me. I laugh at the responses. Never watch the game again, Pumpkin. I don't think somebody who just looks at the responses and laughs at them is going to have that sort of response.
No, if you don't care and you say that they're still following you, which you should like, and you should appreciate the fact that whether they disagree or agree, they're still following you daily. And then you tell them to stop watching the game, Pumpkin? Yeah, okay.
It's
Now, you know, Joe called him a clown in a clown show.
See, like, this is I think Jeremy Booth does know what he's talking about. I might not agree with him entirely. And one of the commenters here real quick, just about like the whole nothing you say will bother me. I laugh at the responses, but then 35 seconds later, never watch the game again. Pumpkin, go do math. Apparently he's very, very block happy. Apparently he's someone who blocks a lot of people. So I don't think what he's saying and what he does is necessarily adding up. Like, if you don't care what people say about you, you're not going to really go out there and block them, and you're not going to, like, be contradicting to them and call them pumpkin, you know? So, like, it doesn't really add up on that front. But, like, whatever. That's not all that important. We'll certainly point out the irony there. I do think that Jason Bristol of Channel 11 KHOU in this podcast, Extra Bases podcast, is flat-out genius. Like, he keeps posting these videos, and everybody loses their mind, and it gets 30,000 views, like, in a day. Why do you keep posting these? Well, because these people keep watching them, which is a little bit what Jeremy Booth had to say. Now, I don't think that they're fans of Jeremy Booth, but they might see what you're saying now. That way they can argue back with him. I don't know if I would go as far to call him a clown. Now, the whole, like, Yordan must hit third or fourth, I do think is a bit out there.
Yeah, and look, we've seen this on a daily basis with guys like Skip and the like that Colin Cowherd, where they just want to get the clicks and the attention. And in the case of Skip Bayless, all he wants to do is give the most outlandishly offensive take he can get so that people lash out at him, because then those click numbers go through the roof. And Joe wanted him on the show, and Paul has done their Sports Sunday show, and he wanted Paul to get him on the show. I was like, oh, that would be must-hear radio, because at some point the clown comment's going
to
come up.
I would love
to
hear
that.
We had him on once with us.
We did.
Before he started going like nuts. Now, I do think it's a little bit I don't agree with him, like the comparison to Colin Cowherd here. Like, what's he saying that's outrageous? He's saying that he'd rather
have Yordan. No, I'm talking about from the Bristol. You brought up Jason Bristol. From the Bristol standpoint, it's genius because there's no clicks that are bad clicks. So if you're gonna keep putting it out there and he's putting it out there, then you're gonna capitalize. You should capitalize on the attention it's getting. So it's, you know, that that's just the standpoint of, you know, drive the business, drive the clicks, get the people's eyeballs on it.
Yeah, I to me it's entertaining. Like, I find it funny. Like, I find Jerry Booth, I don't care about the clicks, but he's blocking people and then he's calling them pumpkin because he's a little bit hot and bothered. Wheatstraw, he's saying it doesn't bother him, but he's taking time to respond. So it's a good point. Now, what he's actually saying, like, I don't really care if Yordan bats second or fourth. I don't like him batting third, but I don't think that that's insane. Now, for some reason, he certainly can trigger the Astros fan base, and then Bristol's a genius for putting it in front of the Astros fan base and then letting them go nuts. That part of it's crazy. I think it would be good if he went on the Killer G's and joined the Killer G's.
I think it would be great.
I would listen. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think from the standpoint, look, he's played the game. You know, he has a baseball background. He's entitled to his opinion. And then you should be open to the discussion part of it. We know that the Astros fan base is passionate. We know that Astros Twitter can find just about anybody that has a negative thing to say about their team and go on the attack. But, yeah, you know, you're asking for the smoke and you're doubling down on it. Then, you know, then either don't engage at all, or if you're going to engage, then, I mean, unless people cross the line to block – don't block. Just
no, I want him
do
to engage. I want this to go on all year. This is highly entertaining. I want this to go on forever.
Yeah, but then, like you said, well, why are you blocking so many people then?
Oh,
that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, that's a bit hypocritical whenever he does that. But it's still funny, and it's still a lot of fun.
Question.
Keep it coming, Bristol. I like what you're doing. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Rockets lost a basketball game yesterday. I think it's meaningless. Do you think it's meaningless? One thing from that game, though, yesterday, I love Ime Udoka, and I'll tell you why next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.